Hey everyone, thanks for listening this week. We are actually going to post a podcast that I recorded at Consensus 2023 from Austin, Texas. We got the live equipment out and I was able to connect with one founder. Unfortunately, a couple others had to flake, but we did make plans to reschedule, so there's some good pods coming out in the near future. If you're interested in being on the podcast again, give us a shout out, but this was a blast to do in person. I'd love to do more of these. At events, so if you'd like to have me at your event, come on a pod, have me do some casting, let me know. I think it went really well, and if you're interested in kind of connecting with people from the event, from BAF, join our Telegram, join our Discord, and again, thanks for listening as always. Enjoy the show.
This episode is sponsored by BAF. BAF stands for the Blockchain Acceleration Foundation, and they are a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to accelerating the development and adoption of Web3. BAF hosts networking and educational meetups and supports blockchain clubs at universities worldwide. BAF's sponsors and supporters include NEAR and the Algorand Foundation, who help BAF launch more educational activities. To learn more, follow the Blockchain Acceleration Foundation on Twitter.
When you think of trade schools, you probably think of blacksmiths or heavy machinery operators. And at Uni, we set out to change this. Uni is helping teachers build modern trade schools by connecting them with employers through our project-based, always-live course library. If you want to learn more about building your own trade school for the jobs of tomorrow, contact us at uniapp.xyz.
Are you sick of deep fakes in the world of AI? Me too, which is why I started using the Ethereum attestation service. EAS is a public good for creating, verifying, and revoking on or off-chain attestations. If you want to start keeping a source of public truth, visit attest.sh. Again, this is the Ethereum attestation service at attest.sh.
All right, we are recording live from Consensus 2023. I am here with the founder,
The co-founder and CTO of Ethereum attestation service.
Awesome. This is Steve. My name is Jake, as always, your host. How's this week of the conference been going for you so far?
Yeah, it's been good. I think we've met plenty of teams that I think are interested in implementing EAS, so it's been really good. Love being around conferences where you can just be around like-minded people and hear about projects that people are building and seeing how we can integrate the technology that we've been building.
Cool. And for those that can't see us, we are currently recording in the BAF room of the conference. How did you kind of hear about BAF or find us?
So I was telling a friend of mine about EAS and how we were looking for to integrate with different entities. And one of the types of integrations we wanted to make was with smart contract auditing firms. And she connected me with Adrian from QuantStamp. So that's how I ended up coming into this room, seeing all the amazing stuff that was actually going on. It's interesting to hear some of the talks.
Nice. And how long have you kind of been out of school, or when did you kind of finish college?
So I'm probably not a great example. I actually dropped out of college early on when I was about 18 to work for Merrill Lynch.
Wait, how did you find the job at Merrill Lynch, or how did that happen?
It was actually through someone I knew that was heading the business intelligence services at Merrill Lynch. They were looking for engineers, and I fit the qualifications, and they brought me on. So it was kind of like a friendly introduction to Merrill Lynch.
That's badass. So how long were you there before you kind of branched out into the Web3 world, or what kind of brought you into the space?
Well, the Merrill Lynch thing was really long ago. That was, I was 18, I'm 20, I'm 37 now. So that was a really long time ago. Thank you.
I'm 29. I always feel like the old man in this bathroom, so I'm happy you're here.
You're definitely not. I originally got into blockchain in 2011. I heard about it through a friend. He sent me an article about Bitcoin, and I read it, and I was really interested, but immediately very skeptical. And I read the white paper, and then I wasn't skeptical anymore. And I started mining it a little bit back then, when it was probably around $5. But at the time, you couldn't really, I was mining maybe one Bitcoin a day. And it was not even worth it. You think now one Bitcoin's worth 30 grand, but back then when you're running a mining rig in your living room and it's like heating up the entire house. It's super loud and you're only making $5 a day. You're like, should I really be running this? And so I did that for a little bit. And at the time, it was around like April 2011. And there was this massive hack with like one of the only exchanges that was around at the time called Mt. Gox. The price of Bitcoin went like under a dollar, and I kind of didn't touch the space for a couple years, not because I didn't want to, but because like kind of everybody left.
Yeah.
And in 2013, I made a post on Reddit that I was like, I was interested in building something in the blockchain space. So I'm a software developer. I've been programming actually like my whole life since I was 6 years old. I've been programming, and I was really interested. I just like quit a job I just quit a job in 2013, January 2013, and I decided I wanted to do something in the blockchain space. And so I went on the Bitcoin subreddit, which was at the time like basically the only way people in the Bitcoin space communicated. And it was like, yeah, it's like the forum for Bitcoin conversation. And I made a post saying like, I'm a developer and I want to build something in the Bitcoin space. And I ended up partnering with this guy from that forum message, and we built like one of the first like Bitcoin games back then.
What was the game?
It was called Satoshi Circle.
Okay, was it fun?
It was a fun game, yeah. It was pretty successful. And in November 2013, I built one of the first Bitcoin wallets, the first Bitcoin wallet that was a Chrome extension. The first extension Bitcoin wallet. So like people know of MetaMask now, but before MetaMask,
there was Steve Mask.
It was CryptoKit, which was a Bitcoin wallet in the browser. It even had like encrypted messaging, PGP messaging built in, and like price feeds and all that stuff. And it was quite popular at the time. And actually, we got Vitalik and Eric Voorhees and Roger Ver to come on as advisors to it. Back then.
So you met them?
Oh yeah. So interestingly enough, my partner that I met from the Reddit forums, this guy named Anthony DiOrio, who was living in Toronto at the time, and he ran some of the first Bitcoin meetups. I think it's the first Bitcoin meetup in Toronto, and Vitalik was one of the first people to show up to that meetup. So in November, when I built this app, me and Anthony went to there's a conference in Vegas, December 2013, and we went to like present the CryptoKit wallet. We had the cool booth and everything, and it was there when he asked me if he told me that Vitalik had this idea for blockchain, and he wanted to hear my opinion about it, what I thought, like whether he should invest in it. And so like like weird story, but me, Vitalik, and Anthony are in a hot tub at the MGM Grand at the spa, and Vitalik told me the idea for Ethereum and I asked him like, well, how do you plan on launching it? How do you plan to make money for yourself? And he actually wanted to launch Ethereum. He wanted the launch of Ethereum to be kind of like the launch of Bitcoin, where like anyone could just jump in and mine. And he never wanted to have like a pre-mine or ICO or anything like that. And then I remember we like transitioned to the sauna, and Anthony offered Vitalik like $300,000 to $500,000 to fund Ethereum.
Wow.
And the next month we all got this Airbnb in Miami, and we were all in town for the North American Bitcoin conference, which was like the first one in Miami. And that's where Vitalik announced Ethereum. That's kind of where we all came together and kind of set the initial stage for Ethereum. And
so you were mining Bitcoin at $5. You really were mining Ethereum at its origin. Is that correct?
No, I was never mining Ethereum. No. This was before Ethereum could even be mined. So wow. Like in January 2014, we all came together. This is really like the first real like Ethereum meetup that ever happened, and that's where Ethereum was announced. It was actually announced at the Bitcoin conference Vitalik told the whole world about Ethereum. Basically, he was like surrounded. Like after that, like everybody loved the idea of Ethereum. And, you know, basically, you know, history happened as it did. And
so, are your timestamps like if I look at the OG code for Ethereum, you're on there?
I didn't write the original code. Actually, it was Gavin Wood who wrote was writing the original code for it. I was actually responsible in the beginning. The first week that we were there was mostly kind of discussing like who was responsible for what, what the allocations would be, and basically just meeting for the first time. It was pretty cool. But then I was in my main job at the time that I was assigned to do was because we had CryptoKit, the CryptoKit wallet. Okay. We had the crowd sale for Ethereum. And the idea was for every Bitcoin, you would get around like 2,000 Ether.
Wow.
So that was back then. And so because we...
How are you doing that, by the way? Were you like literally like just depositing it like manually? Or was there like code that like when you send it to an address? Or how are you facilitating that?
So the implementation that I built never ended up becoming a thing. Like so, because originally we were going to implement the crowd sale into the CryptoKit wallet. It turned out not to be the way that we did it. It ended up being on the Ethereum.org website where you could do the crowdfund.
Ah.
Basically everybody got their own unique, I think, Bitcoin address, and they would send Bitcoin to that address, and then they also like generated a private key, and they held that private key until after the first version of Ethereum actually launched, and they were able to actually access their Ether.
That's awesome. So at this point, were you like, I need to abandon this Bitcoin wallet, you know, extension I'm working on, like Ethereum's the future, or like kind of where was your head at that point after meeting Gavin and
working with them? Honestly, so I got to the house and I got to meet, like, there was like 10 of us in the beginning. And one thing that I noticed was there's a lot of like business guys, and I was like hoping for like more engineers, and what I noticed is like there was just all these like business dudes that it felt like they were just trying to extract value from like Vitalik. It was like maximal extractable Vitalik, like we call it. And it kind of made me feel discouraged about the future of Ethereum. And like one of like the worst parts that I saw is like, you know, when there was like kind of like a little argument about who would be like the original, like considered the founders, right? And at one point, Gavin was told that he couldn't even be considered a founder, that he wasn't a founder.
Even though he wrote some of the code.
He was writing he was the only one writing code at the time for Ethereum. And the idea being that they had decided a week prior who was going to be the founders. It was just so stupid. And some of the founders weren't even there. Like one of the founders who got like a massive share was this guy Beehive, who was just like an owner of Bitcoin Magazine at the time, and it was just, I didn't like it, and I was really scared that Ethereum wouldn't make it, and that Vitalik's idea would be just basically wrecked by all these suits, basically.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, I'm grateful that that didn't happen, but rather than, you know, taking like a much bigger part of the Ethereum Foundation in the early days, I didn't for those reasons, because, you know, I really was passionate about, I'm really passionate about technology, as a developer, you know, who has been taken advantage of in the past, to just watch it kind of happen. You know, Vitalik was really young, I think he was 19, you know, at the time, so it was a little sad to see that happen.
And do you regret it at all, or you seem pretty calm about this whole thing?
No, I don't regret it. I mean, I'm doing good. I don't regret it because at the time it was the decision that made the most sense. I don't think I would have been able to deal with like some of the toxicity in like the early days.
Damn. So let's keep moving with your journey. So you got this, that happens. And then what happens for the next 5 years, 2015 to 2020, or I'm at that right time frame?
Yeah.
So
After that, I went on to build another wallet called Rush Wallet, which was like a super easy to use wallet in the browser. Like you just would load up Rush, but it doesn't exist anymore. But it was rushwallet.com. You'd go on there, you just move your finger around the screen, and it would just generate a new wallet. And you could just infinitely generate new wallets super easily and just use them and kind of like throw them away and make new ones.
So wait, you're doing this like really with just like a weird swipe motion?
Yeah. So like one of the idea was to add entropy to the random generation. We'd use the movement of your finger to just like create entropy, to create randomness, to make the key more secure. So that was more like of a gimmick, but the idea was that you can instantly have a wallet. Like
you
know, your grandma can go on a web page and right away just have a Bitcoin wallet without any account, without having to worry about really a lot of key management. The idea was you could the encrypted key would be stored in the URL, the URI fragment, which never got sent to the server. And then you could you could just save that URL. You're able to access your wallet whenever you wanted, but no one had access to it except you. So it was just like a super easy to use wallet. So I did that, and you know, I was building stuff in the wallet space, playing around a lot in like the AI space. But
for context, by the way, how many between these two wallet projects, like million users, 100,000 users?
So the CryptoKit wallet, I mean, definitely not a million users. I don't think there was even like a million Bitcoin people at the time.
Okay.
But I know that we never wanted to do analytics like because we were really pro privacy. But what we did know is that we had 5 stars in the Google App Store and like thousands of reviews.
Okay.
So I can't tell you the actual numbers, but CryptoKit eventually became Jax, and after I sold it to Anthony, I think like 2016.
Okay.
But since then, in 2017, I was like super interested in like in identity, decentralized identity and reputation. I actually participated in a hackathon in Toronto, and I had this idea for kind of like a way to kind of solve this decentralized identity problem. And I participated in a hackathon. And actually two of the judges were these working for this company called Uport, which was also an identity platform run by Consensus. And actually they didn't like my project because it was not even similar to theirs, but it was kind of competing with theirs.
Yeah.
So the judges never, I didn't get any points for that. So I was like really discouraged. And like 3 years later, I noticed that still there was nothing in the identity and reputation space that like anyone was using. And it's such like an important problem. Like, in this like decentralized world, how do you know who to trust, right?
Right.
How do we do voting? You know, how do we do like under collateralized loans? Like how do I give you a loan without, you know, if you have nothing to like, you can't risk your reputation in some way. And so I was thinking about it for a while, and I was like, well, maybe no one solved this because no one really understands what identity actually is. You know? And I was thinking, well, what actually is identity? And then I was thinking like, well, what's my identity? What's my first identity? And I was like, well, like at some point I had no identity, then I had an identity. When was that point? I was thinking, well, when I was born, my mom named me Steve, right? She essentially like attested to me being Steve.
And you were born in the U.S. or Canada?
I was born in the U.S.
Okay.
Yeah, Brooklyn, New York.
Okay. You don't sound like a Brooklyn guy, but I would be like...
I'm multicultural.
There we go.
Yeah.
So you got this name Steve, and that's your... That's
yeah, so that was my first attestation, right?
Yeah.
And then I went to school, and the teachers attested to my grades, right?
Yeah.
And, like, the kids in school... my class, they could have like attested to whether they thought they liked me or they thought I was cool or not. You know, I would have gotten a job that my employer could have attested to whether I was a good employee or whether I was an employee at all. The government attested to like my passport and my driver's license, right? And I was thinking about it, and I was like, well, actually, you can really elegantly represent identity and reputation as an aggregate of attestations about somebody. I was like, wow, well, actually, if you want to be able to solve identity and reputation, you can't just build an identity platform. It's like one layer too high. You need to start with some sort of base layer where any entity can just attest about anything.
Right? Yeah.
And so that's why I built EAS, Ethereum Attestation Service. Like, the idea is, currently what we have is all these different identity platforms, voting platforms, even like, you know, proof of existence, proof of identity. They all kind of build their own little like siloed platform that does, they're essentially attesting to something, like attesting, or we're attesting to your humanity, or we're attesting to this. They do it in this like siloed platform that has its own API, has its own like completely different way to connect to. And then another company comes out and they're like, oh, we do KYC identity. They do a completely different, they create a completely different new siloed platform. And it just, the space is so fragmented, right?
Yeah.
And like, as a developer, I don't want to, it's impossible to like aggregate, you know, an identity from like 500 different providers with all these different APIs that like don't, aren't interoperable with each other. It just makes no sense. So the idea with EAS, it's just a base layer where any entity can just attest about anything. It's a public good, it's not profit, there's no token to it. We realized that like you can't have a base layer for trust for the world if there's some sort of like money extraction there. And so what we built is EAS at its base core. It's there's an on-chain and an off-chain component. The on-chain component, there's two smart contracts. One is called the schema registry, and it allows anyone to register any type of attestation. So like, say you want to do like a vote for like you want to vote for president. And so maybe there's like an event ID, which could be like the next election. And then maybe like a candidate ID is like the candidate who you would be voting for. So you can go to the schema registry and you can just register this data type, and then you can just attest with that data type. And so like just that simple primitive, people are able to aggregate attestations and build up all sorts of information about you.
So let's work this back a little bit, because I think that you made a good point earlier about being born, and that's when your identity starts. So right now, you know, KYC is brutal, but you know, if you have a driver's license in the U.S., it's not too long sometimes. So I guess kind of with your attestation service, where do you get the base points here, right? Because the driver's license comes from having a birth certificate and a social security number, which comes from being born in a U.S. hospital where a doctor tested you being born, and the government probably had some sort of a utility bill or something from you too. Like, I guess kind of where are those core artifacts or documents coming from in your attestation system? Is it just trust of people, or?
Yeah, so the value of an attestation is as valuable as the entity who attested and what they're attesting about and like who's actually verifying this attestation, right? So if I attested to your address saying that you passed KYC, right, that might not have much weight, right, because I'm not a KYC provider. But if Coinbase attests saying that you passed KYC, that might be much more valuable. And so, but maybe some other entity doesn't care about Coinbase attestations, right?
Yeah.
So, and in the real world, everything's pretty relative, right? Like, my friend might have some sort of reputation, and then one of my other friends might have a completely different reputation. I might have a friend who has a particular reputation, but to you, that friend does not have the same reputation,
right?
So we're all kind of different, and we value what people say relative to the network of friends, people that we trust, right?
Yeah.
You might ask your friend for a recommendation for a plumber, right? And he might be like, well, I use this plumber, or my friend used this plumber. And that's, you feel like that plumber is now a little bit more reputable than just some random plumber you'd find, you know, online.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely get the goal with DIDS, and I've been playing around with the LearnCard SDK lately. It kind of allows you to issue credentials to DIDS, like as a teacher, which I think is awesome. Like that at least creates like a trusted like a educational history. It's not like diplomas or LinkedIn profiles. So that's great. What documents or what things are you able to attest to right now in your platform, or have you like kind of proved out?
Yeah, anything. So the idea is we are not an identity platform, right? The idea is like we are not.
So you're not DIDS, really.
Well, we allow you to create your identifier is your address, right? Because we're EVM based, right? And you can make on-chain attestations, which are stored in a smart contract, right? But when you create off-chain attestations, you can export them as like W3C TIDs, VCs, or you can, you know, keep them in like EIP 712 format, which is like native to the Ethereum EVMs. What we built is we don't just have these smart contracts. We also built this website called EAS Scan, which is like the Ether scan of attestations. You can go on there and you can easily view all the attestations that have been made. You can design your own schemas, any kind of data type, with no code tools. Or if you're not a coder, you can easily develop any kind of schema type and you can attest with it. But in the same way as, like, you know, EtherScan is only like a tool for being able to verify things, but like while technically you can use EtherScan to like make a Uniswap trade, it's probably not like advisable.
Right.
And like our tools are more of like a dev tool. We want people to be able to build on top of it. We don't presuppose how people will attest, but we just want to give the tools and be a base layer where entities can attest using EAS. So we've talked to a bunch of people in the space, and like some of the interesting things to attest to are like a proof of attendance, a smart contract auditing firm attesting that they have audited a smart contract. Now imagine like that's so much stronger than what they do now. Like these smart contract auditing firms, you basically go on their website and they'll like list the contracts they all audited, but imagine them as attestations. And then imagine like a site like EtherScan listing in the contracts tab like attestations from reputable
blue check mark type.
Yeah,
exactly. That's very cool. So I guess kind of if you were to, you know, be someone who's on the other side of this, so someone, you're not yourself, you're a student and you want to kind of contribute to this ecosystem, I guess what is like a low-hanging fruit? Like, could you test that? I guess you went to college with someone, or could you, I mean, is there really, there's no,
but it's not so much about them attesting it. Yeah. It's about, I think, about building really cool things on top of EAS.
Okay.
Like, you know, you can use it to build a decentralized Twitter, right? Like, right. What is a tweet other than like an attestation of from someone saying that they're saying something, right? Okay. It's a proof. And I think EAS opens up, makes a lot of opportunities for new developers that are trying to get into the space. Because, you know, right now, if you want to basically say you want to do supply chain or you want to do some sort of a social networking platform, typically you just build your own smart contracts and build all these tools like an APIs around like some custom solution. Whereas instead now knowing that there's EAS, you can just develop any kind of schema for whatever data you want to attest to and just attest with it, whether it's like attesting to carbon credits, attesting to whether people trust each other, like each other, attesting to whether a project is a rug pull or not. You know, there's so many infinite things. It's so generalized, but it kind of has to be, because identity is really like, it's really an abstract thing and like very meta. Like, you know, you can't, there's no other way to break down identity, I don't think, other than as like a series of attestations.
Okay. So I guess we got to wrap up, I guess, here, sure. But I got two rapid fire. First is, are you afraid of like a bad agent coming in, doing something, like you said, attesting to a smart contract security, doing this like six times, suddenly that, you know, their attestation kind of carries some weight, making their own sinister smart contract, attesting that, suddenly it has a high trust profile and people get, you know, screwed.
Well, yeah. The idea is that the weight of the attestation is based on who's attesting.
Yeah.
So if there's some like bad actor who's attesting like positively to people who don't deserve it or negatively to people who don't deserve it, the value of those attestations like will be based on the user's previous attestations, the attestations coming into that user, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it's all relative, right? Like if I attest that I trust you, you know, like, and your friends might, or if you attest that you trust me, your friends might actually might trust me in some way because it's from you. They know it's from you. So everybody makes up their own decisions in reality about what attestations they trust. Like, you know, if some random person on the street tells you something, you're probably not going to trust it as much as if your parents tell you or if your friend tells you. And so the idea is this creates like a really natural way that's more in line with how reality really is, and how we like interact with people. We trust the people that we trust, the people that they trust, and you know, we form these like little groups. And I think that attestations are like a Lego block for being able to build like a Web3 version of these types of interactions.
Yeah, and last question, you know, are you, you said that this is a nonprofit. Would you be okay with people who build on top of this, you know, kind of making profit on these attestations? Yeah,
absolutely. That's the plan. Like, the base layer can't be for profit because, you know, who's gonna use it as a base layer for identity or reputation if there's some like value extraction going on? It must be free. But like, you know, if you want to build a verification service where you're charging. For example, you verify someone's documents and you attest that they have a phone number or that they're a human. Like, that's a service that can earn money, but that actually has a real value, right? Because if people start trusting attestations from that entity, you can have like an NFT smart contract, for example, that has civil resistance because it requires an attestation proving that they're a real person instead of just letting bots, you know, buy up every mint.
Well, thanks for coming on the podcast. Certainly awesome being in person. I get to make eye contact. I feel like I have like a real conversation, and good luck.
Yeah, thank you very much.